We've been talking about how the change of pronouns went from three to one. You know, when the Abraham met these three people, these three beings. And sometimes in those first few verses of Genesis 18, it says they, and then sometimes it says singular he, and it goes back and forth, and the rabbis have all kinds of fun with that.
All they need is an excuse to talk all night.
Huh? Right. This is a great excuse. They talk all night about this one. Let me find it. There's some interesting stuff. I've got too many notes. Shut up. We talked about how that was the power of creation, that it was the lowest level that man could know, these, that these three beings represented God as the creator, then we got him, God as ruler, and then God as essence, or logos. We talked about how Abraham had arranged his household, and by that experience of time, just the passage of time, he arranged his household by seeing the vanity. So his household was empty of its idolatry, therefore he made room for. He had made room for God as he saw. Now, there's others say that, and I can't find it, that those three beings were God, and then this is a break. Not to go anywhere, but just right there. This incident in Genesis 18 took place 3 days after Abraham's circumcision.
You know, I was going to say that just in the beginning, but there you went and said
it. He stole his thunder.
I just stole his thunder.
No, I mean,
explains why he was sitting when they showed up.
Yeah. The three, it says, there were, the reason it says there's three in one, it says God was there, but there were three archangels with him. So it wasn't just, God wasn't a visitor, is the idea. And the three archangels accompanied God, disguised as Arab wayfarers. Michael, to announce Isaac's birth. Gabriel, to destroy Sodom. And Raphael, to heal Abraham.
What did Raphael do?
Healed Abraham.
See, I knew this. I knew that.
Why don't you call Raphael first?
The archangel Raphael is the angel of healing. He's the messenger of healing. So we got Raphael, Michael.
So when we pray for
Gabriel,
we're really calling for Raphael.
No, we're not. Don't start that Catholic shit. Yeah.
Actually, it sounds more like mutant ninja angels.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, mutant ninja angels.
Oh. Where's my stick? Where's my stick? Fred cleaned up in here and I haven't found my stick since.
Why did it take them 3 days?
What? They wanted to hurt a little bit.
No, because it's Passover.
Yeah, this was the 3 days of Passover.
Oh,
yeah,
sabbatical or
sabbatical.
No, they couldn't appear except at the appointed time, and the appointed time was Passover. They appeared on the first day of the Seder meal. And that's what he fed them. Then Sodom was destroyed on the eighth day of Passover. So all this took place in the Passover season.
And it returned at
night. And it came to pass at midnight. Wow. All right. Again, the reason that Abraham is the model, he's the last common ancestor of all monotheistic religions. That's he's an incredible being in history. There's no other common ancestor for the other, for the any, for the monotheistic religions. But he had, as all people did at the time, they had a horoscope cast at his, when he was at his birth, and a horoscope cast for, they did it routinely, so there's one cast for him and one cast for his wife, Sarai. And astrologers had told him, quote, "You will never beget a son." But God reassured him at this meeting. And he's been, that's why he's been always trying to give the heritage to somebody else. He gave it to Isaac. You remember Eliezer he tried to give it to, and then he tried to give it to Lot. He's always trying to get, and then he tried to give it to Ishmael.
He's trying to give it away because he doesn't really believe he will have a child?
Yeah, he doesn't believe he'll have a legitimate child. That's what the idea. And it says, so at this meeting, God told him, God reassured him, that horoscope was cast for Abram. Huh. Therefore have I changed your name. And as Abraham, he will beget a son. And I have also changed Sarai to Sarah's name because of her, similarly because of her horoscope. So I just thought you got
so much for this.
Huh? That's pretty neat.
Yeah. It really is neat because, you know, I'm always calculating without God. And the calculations are always real complicated, trying to come up with this really complicated solution. And God's solutions are always really incredibly simple and elegant. Like,
changing
okay,
name.
You're no longer able.
Okay. Let's go to Genesis 18. There's a whole bunch of wild things. Let me quickly read the first eight verses, and then we're gonna go. We'll probably spend the rest of it contrasting this as this is the, really the first Passover, and it's the Passover, but it's where the promise is really only a promise. You understand? But it's still a Passover. So it foretold it. It revealed all things in this first Passover, and we'll see how it did it in this sort of really neat way. And the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre, and that's a terrible translation as we've talked about. He appeared unto him at the oak. The word plains there should be translated oak. He appeared at this particular tree. It's the oak tree of Mamre, which was a famous tree in all religions too. And he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day, and he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And again, they say the three men were disguised as Arab wayfarers, but that's what some say. But God was there too. And then others say it was the three manifestations of God,
so
as Logos, Kryos, and
This was during the fast.
Well, yeah, it would have to be the fast of the firstborn. Sure. He was fasting because he hurt. Because his pee-pee got cut up.
And then, I mean, the inference here is that he knew, he recognized these people.
The inference here, as we'll see, is that he was looking forward for this. He was waiting for something. He didn't know what it was.
Because he had done this circumcision thing?
Yeah. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw, he ran to meet them from the tent door. That's right.
And fell to his knees in pain.
And bowed himself from pain. And he bowed himself toward the ground and said, "My Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree." Now see that, the tree, I mean, it's the place, not the plains. "And I will fetch a morsel of bread, and comfort you your hearts, after that ye shall pass on. For therefore are you come to your servant." And they said, "So do as thou hast said." And Abraham hastened into the tent unto Sarah, and said, "Make ready quickly three measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes upon the hearth. Now, this 3 measures of fine meal is like, it's several bushels. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff being done here for all of the people. There's going to be a Passover for all the people that are in the part of the camp. And make cakes upon the hearth. And Abraham ran unto the herd and fetched a calf tender and good and gave it unto a young man, and he hasted to dress it. Now some say that young man was Ishmael, and because of that, Ishmael has been the type. Even here, he was serving the promise, while the promise was yet in the loins of Abram.
And there's no opportunity here to even expect it. It's just he went and got one that looked good.
He went and got it. And he took butter and milk and the calf which he had dressed and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree, and they did eat. Now, go to Leviticus 9. Read the 4th verse, somebody.
Also a bullock and a ram.
Read 1 through 4.
And it came to pass on the 8th day that Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel. And he said unto Aaron, take thee a young calf for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering without blemish, and offer them before the Lord. And unto the children of Israel thou shalt speak, saying, take ye a kid of the goats for a sin offering and a calf and a lamb, both of the first year without blemish, for a burnt offering. Also a bullock and a ram for peace offerings to sacrifice before the Lord, and a meat offering mingled with oil, for today the Lord will appear unto you.
Okay. Today the Lord will appear unto you for this peace offering. Well, how much more shall the Lord appear to Abraham, who circumcised himself for my sake, is what the Talmud says, that God said. You understand? They simply, here, they made the peace offering of a kid as this peace offering, as the offering. In Abraham, he circumcised himself for the Lord's sake. Now, how much more shall he then appear for the Son who was crucified for his sake? And so, that's why you can't really have a part of this until you know you're the chief of sinners, until you know that this crucifixion, this was a major factor. You understand? Now he sat while the Shekinah stood. He sat while the glory of God stood.
Is it reverse? Didn't he stand? Well, they ate?
No. We're talking up here when they first come unto him in verse 1.
Sorry.
In verse 1, he sat while they appeared. Again, there's a great, humongous body of work in the Talmud about that one verse.
About him sitting in the temple?
About him sitting. He sat, and in the sitting process, he fulfilled all the laws of Sabbath.
Oh, he was at rest while he was waiting.
He was totally at rest. And because he was totally at rest, God appeared. Rest is the 7th in the mystical ancient numerology. 6 is man, 7 is the rest. But the rest isn't the goal. To be at rest or at peace isn't the goal. The goal is the bride, which is 8. And so, or the appearing. And I mean, you understand? Nothing. That's why Noah wasn't considered as one of the great fathers of faith, because he only represented, his name Noah means rest. He represented the 7. That's why even we no longer know Christ after the flesh, because Christ after the flesh only represents 7. But God wants 8, but you can't get to 8 without going through 7. You have to be at rest before you can see the rest. You have to be, you have to fulfill the laws. That's why the day of the Lord is the only day. The day of the Lord can finally begin when we're at rest. Understand? So everything since the cross has been God waiting for a people to keep the Sabbath. To be at rest. To cast all your burden. That's why you cast your burden on him, because you can't carry the burden on the Sabbath. That's what we talked about this morning in Bible study. Does everybody understand that? So cast your burden. You have a care. It's an illegitimate care. It's a care of the God of this world who is deceiving you. Nothing can be done to solve it. It has to be cast off. Cast your burden on him so that you can enter into the rest, so you can sit at rest, so God will appear. The rest isn't the goal. Capisce?
God was praying for you, you wouldn't even
remember you had a body. Then Abraham said, "Let a little water be fetched." God said, "I swear I shall repay your children." I can't remember what that is. We can look that up later. But he said he repaid the children, again, because Abraham got this water. God said, "I shall repay your children." So in the wilderness, he spoke to the rock and the water flowed. "Spring up, O well, sing ye unto it." Then in the land, quote, "a land of brooks, of water, of fountains, and depths that spring out of the valley and hills." Speaking of the land in Deuteronomy 8. That in Messiah's times predicted in Zechariah, living water shall go forth out of Jerusalem, and then finally fulfill in Messiah, in us. "He that believeth on me, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water." So the tie is all the way back according to this loop. From this little statement, "Let a little water be fetched," by Abraham, then the whole, that began the process. Am I boring everybody or something?
No, I'm just a little confused about what you just said.
What? Okay, go to Genesis 18. Verse 4, Abraham is saying, "Let a little water be fetched. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree." He's saying that to God. God says, "I will repay Abraham and his seed for that gesture of hospitality." And he repaid him in the wilderness when he spoke to the rock, and the water flowed out of the rock, and it says, "Spring up, O well, sing ye unto it." And he also repaid him in the land, from the land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of the valleys and hills. Then he repaid him in prophecy when it says that living water shall go out from Jerusalem. Then he repaid him in us as the seed of Abraham. "He that believeth on me, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water." You understand now?
Yeah.
Everybody got it? Then Abraham said, "And wash your feet in the wilderness," and Ezekiel it says, "Then wash I thee in water," Ezekiel 16, when it says he found us blood covered in the blood from our murderers, and how we've murdered and hated everyone around us. And then God says, "Then will I wash thee in water." And then in the land, in Isaiah 1, where he says, "I will wash you and make you clean." Then in Messiah's times, predicted in Isaiah 4, when the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, then it's fulfilled finally in John 13, when Jesus washed the disciples' feet. That's why he did it, to fulfill his type. You understand?
That's
God
the
washed.
Last tithe of the earth. Is that what you said about foot washing?
Right. It's the last tithe of the earth. Your feet are washed because it's where you stand on the earth, and the washing of their feet separates you from your last tithe. And it's an act of faith. I mean, you don't have to figure it out and say, yes, I've done this, or what does it mean? By the act of the feet washing, you have, by God, by Christ washing your feet, you have been cleansed. It may not look like it for 3.5 years, the mystical 42 months. Capisce?
Yeah.
Everybody understand that perfectly? This is pretty complicated stuff, in a way.
It sounds like we're reading the Talmud a little bit, the way you're presenting it tonight. Like so-and-so said here, and over here, and over there. It sounds like the Talmud.
And Abraham said, and I will fetch a morsel of bread. And God said, by thy life I will repay your children in the wilderness. Behold, I will cause to rain bread from heaven for you. In the land, he said, a land of wheat and barley. In Messiah's times, in the Psalms, he said, he will be as a rich cornfield in the land. And then fulfilled, and I am the bread of life. And then fulfilled in us when you understand the afkuman. Blessed art thou, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, Blessed art thou, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who bringeth forth bread from the earth. And so the prayer, where we don't even know it, is we're tying ourselves back to this point where Abraham said, I will fetch a morsel of bread. And we are, by the act of taking that in faith, we are proclaiming to God and to our internal senses that we are now ready to be poured out in broken bread for those around us.
It's tested by the man that comes to the door.
That's right.
Be at the door of the house or the door.
And Abraham said, recline yourselves under the tree. And God said, by thy life I will repay thy children in the wilderness. He spread a cloud for a covering. In the land, he shall dwell in booths 7 days. In Messiah's time, there shall be a tabernacle for a shadow in the heat, in the daytime from the heat. It's fulfilled if you understood covering. Now, he's provided us the spiritual covering. Abraham said, thou didst run after, the herd in the wilderness. A wind from the Lord brought cross quails from the sea. I don't think I'm communicating here tonight.
How did you get quails out of the sea?
Across the sea. Go to Numbers 11. Read verse 27.
Sorry. there it is. And there went forth a wind from the Lord, brought quails from the sea, and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side, and as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. Is that like a pile of quails?
Yes, a lot of quail.
A pile of quails?
They complained.
What verse are you in?
I'm in 31. That was 31. A
buttload of quail.
Buried. Yeah.
It's coming out of their ears.
And the people stood up all that day, and all that night, and all the next day, and they gathered the quails. He that gathered least gathered 10 homers. And so
one homer is 11 bushels.
Oh, my.
So 10 homers is 110 bushels of quail.
And they spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. So they have like a quail feast.
Mm.
Yeah. But then it's flesh reverse.
Yeah.
And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord smote the people with a very great plague.
And he called the name of that place Kibroth Hattaavah. Kibroth Hattaavah.
Because there they buried the people that lost it.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. The people journeyed from Yada Yada to unto Hazeroth and Aboah and Hazeroth. Why did... Was that just a close place? How could they journey if they were all killed?
Well, they didn't kill them all, obviously.
They were just the ones that left them.
Here, that would be all of us, right?
Okay.
Silly me!
So, for those of you who are a little shaky on this good bad thing, lusting is bad.
Behaving good.
And
lusting
while eating quail is particularly bad.
No, if you really want to see it, it's lusting by wanting more than you have. It's
more
particularly
quails than you have.
More anything.
Yeah, because they had the bread, and the bread was totally fulfilling unless they had idolatry or guilt. So those that wanted quail, obviously, were idolaters. They couldn't be here.
And stood by them. The Lord went before them. Exodus. God standeth in the congregation of God. In Psalms. And it's, the breaker is gone up before them, and the Lord at the head of them. And then it's fulfilled. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Who's that promise going to?
Anybody
I will never leave.
It.
Huh?
I just want to say to anybody who reads it.
Anyway, I don't think that we're. I'm going to skip some of this stuff. Do you know tradition says that this and the previous meeting with God occurred at Passover? Isaac cannot be born in that area until Sodom and Gomorrah are destroyed. And this meeting is a picture in reverse of Passover, the washing of God's feet. In the New Testament, Jesus washes the disciples' feet, etc.
You know, what I was just thinking, in a way, it's a sort of a picture in reverse, too, of the covenant. Abram was asleep, and God did everything there. And here, Abram's doing everything, and God's resting.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool.
Points.
Now, Abraham must have looked forward to this meeting. And by the Hebrew words, it's without doubt that he did. He was waiting for God to carry out the promise that had been given in Genesis 17, verse 16. But this idea of expecting is something that we know very little about. Expecting is different than lusting. Expecting has as its component waiting. but waiting in rest. It's this idea of expecting yet being fully and completely satisfied in the state of being that you're in. It's unbelievably important. Otherwise, you'll never know the promises of God. Because you can't expect, you can't know the promises of God until you expect them. You can't expect them until you can rest and be content while waiting for them. So it's like it's all here is the only place your enemy is. Your enemy is it's only in your mind. It's nowhere else. Go to Romans 8.
What'd you do?
I moved.
You're not supposed to do that.
But we've talked before about the word if in the Greek. Most of the time when the word if is used in the New Testament, it's the Greek word eis, E-I-S. It doesn't mean if as a conditional thing. It means in view of the fact. In verse 8:14, for as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. How are you led by the Spirit of God? How do you know whether you're led by the Spirit of God or not? Because you think you do? How do you know? How do you know whether you're led by the Spirit? How do you know that what you're thinking about, what you feel like, what you want to do is God's will? It's led by the Spirit of God. This is if the human race knew the answer to that question, we would have avoided many, many wars. There's only one way to know whether or not you're led by the Spirit of God. You take no thought for tomorrow. You take no thought for the things you're going to eat. You take no thought for your own life. You take no thought for your own agenda or plans. Because God, the Spirit of God, is only revealed in your abandonment. It's only, then you create the vacuum where the Spirit of God rushes in, and you live instantly, always in season. But He will never fight with you. Do you understand how totally defenseless the Spirit of God is? You can beat up the Spirit of God with one little finger. That's why He can only come into the place that has been emptied. That's why so very few people know anything about God. They know a lot about their idolatry with regard to who God is. They know a lot about some asinine ideas, but they know nothing about God. Because their own image of God is keeping them from knowing God. Do you understand why you have to empty yourself? This is different from every other religion. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, though He was in the form of God, yet He thought it not something to be grasped, to be equal with God, but emptied Himself and made Himself of no reputation. That's a moment-by-moment emptying of these incredible things and agendas and ideas. God could save the world in a split second. He could destroy all things in a split second. He could change anything in a split second. One of the tests of Him was to take Him up into a high mountain and in a moment of time show Him all the kingdoms of the world and their power and their glory. And Satan said to Him, "All this has been delivered over to Me. And whomsoever I will give it." And Jesus emptied Himself. They that are led by the Spirit of God, these are the legitimate children of God. The word sons there is the word technon. Everybody says they're following God. I mean, anybody that names the name of God, I don't care whether, you know, New Age horse hockey or Elizabeth Clare prophet or the 50,000 sects of Muslims or the Jews or all of the Christian sects, everybody says they're following God. Every demagogue has said they were following God. I mean, you understand what I'm saying? Every time you have been in a state of rebellion, you said you were following God, if you were a believer. God's just leading me. God's leading me to another place. Well, I felt the Spirit of God leading me over to Hawaii. I felt the Spirit of God leading me away from this place because I have too many troubles here, so I'm going to, let me see, Mallorca.
I sent you credit cards once.
Huh? God sent you credit cards. Oh, yeah, that's right.
I know that God.
The God of plastic.
I know him.
No, I had this great, huge bill, and all of a sudden the Spirit of God sent me a credit card, and I was able to pay that bill. People, idiots making testimonies like that. Don't you know, can't you guess by now, that if you have any idea of what's going to happen next, I promise you it's not the Spirit of God that you're following, it's the Spirit of the God of this world. We have to be in a continuum of emptying of self. He emptied himself, made himself of no reputation. Not think up some horse shit plan and go try to do it. I went through that. I've been down that road. Not to discriminate that this is good work, God is using, not to say this is bad and this is good, God is using the most terrible things in the universe equally with the what you think are the best things to bring about his plan. Empty. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the children of God. Legitimate heirs of God. For as you have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption. The word adoption is huiothesios. It's a terrible translation. It means you have received the spirit of the placing of the Son. Huiothesios, the placing of the Son. You receive the spirit of adoption whereby we cry, Abba, Father. We cry, Abba, because Abba is a word for daddy. We know God so intimately that we can call him daddy, and we have the right to. And the spirit of itself, the spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the legitimate children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ. If so be that we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creature waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. Waiteth. Expecting. Waiting, expecting. The whole creation is waiting expectantly. For the creature was made subject to vanity. The word vanity there means futility. The creature was made subject to futility, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope. There's not one of you that wanted to be made futile. And you fight against that futility with your dying breath. Oh my God, I got to be somebody. I got to do something. Hard-headed assholes. It's not being somebody or doing something. I mean, it's simply called rebellion. And rebellion is just like witchcraft. Because you've conjured up. You've taken the eye of a newt, the tail of a frog, and the tongue of a salamander. But you've got all kinds of neat names for them. And you put them all together in your little cauldron up here in the high place, and you little witch sit there and churn it, causing something to happen. Worst damn thing could happen to you was that if your plan ever was successful.
As you're saying this, it's dawning on me that Christ, you know, he studied, he read, the scriptures were open to him, and he took a gamble. I mean, he thought, this is me. They're talking about me. He took a gamble and he had himself baptized. And he had his first epiphany. And it was then demonstrated, it was then proved that what he had figured out was right. And the immediate response to that was to be taken into the wilderness to be tested.
Right.
I.e., as soon as he knew he was right and he had proof that he was right, then he, as the God of this world,
had to test him.
That had to be.
Right.
That's why it was immediate.
That's right.
That was the response.
You can only be tested by what's... Temptation or testing is it's the test of an alien power of a possession that you know you have. If you don't know you have it, there's no test. You understand?
No. What did you just say?
Christ was tempted in all points, like we are. The first thing that happened when he had the epiphany, when Christ said, when God said to him, and he heard, this is my beloved son. The next instant thing that happened was that sonship, that legitimacy was tested in the wilderness by Satan. And he offered to give him everything. You're not tested. Jesus said of his disciples, you are they that have continued with me in my temptation. He didn't say to his disciples, you are they that have continued in the temptation that's common to all men. That's nothing. His temptation is to take this risk of faith that I totally and completely distrust this thing. I give this thing no credence. I give my sensory perception no credence. I hear that my heritage is from a different sort. And I empty myself constantly. I never protect myself.
Because he knew what those words meant. Those words meant, all this is delivered unto you. You have a right. You can do anything you want in time and space.
That's right.
You can exercise all power in time and space.
That's right. That's why we must be seated.
You don't have to be futile.
We must be, right. I mean, don't you understand that there's anything, God could have done it, what you know, in an instant. Whatever it is.